Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And I'm laughing because with the magic of radio, we recorded the rest of the show before we recorded the intro.
Yes.
So, hey, sometimes that happens. First of all, I just wanted to acknowledge the passing of a baseball icon, Jim Boughton, who wrote Ball 4. Did you ever read Ball 4?
No.
Read it.
Okay.
It's really good. But it was kind of the first sort of baseball expose back when he was pitching with the Yankees, talking about all the things that were going on, whether it was in the bullpen, the clubhouse, you name it. And it broke the code of you're not supposed to talk about this stuff in baseball. But it's a fascinating, if I can find my copy of it, the Fox library will be open. But
right.
So anyway, Ball 4, if you haven't read it. And the craziness that is the NBA free agency period. First of all, they're playing with Monopoly money.
Yeah.
But second of all, your take on the... I mean, it's been a week and a half since we were in here. I feel like everything has happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, the big news since our last show, since we taped it last Tuesday, was the Kawhi decision. And he had his own little code of secrecy. For him, it wasn't what happened within the locker room. It was he didn't want anybody to know who he was meeting with or when, what was happening with his decision-making process. And then we get those incredible Woj bombs back-to-back in the middle of the night of the expected of Kawhi's going to sign on one of these three teams, but the unexpected that he's going to do so with Paul George. So what an amazing night that Kawhi was able to engineer to get his buddy Paul George out to join him with the Clippers.
It's crazy. And then, of course, the Thunder go from, you think, years ago when it was Westbrook, Durant, Harden, Paul. I mean, that's like the Mickey Mouse Club with like Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears in it.
Yeah, they've had all four of those guys in the last decade, and now they have none.
Right.
Because it was just last night that Westbrook got traded to Houston. But I think Oklahoma City was probably a little bit excited about Paul George coming in and demanding a trade because they weren't going to go anywhere with Westbrook and Paul George.
No, that was not. That was just going to be a flatline thing.
6-7 seed, you maybe win one round, but they weren't going to win a championship because they have all this money invested in Steven Adams. They don't have enough money to go make any moves and build the roster around them and get some shooters for those guys to pass to. So when Paul George demands a trade, Sam Presti says, okay, fine, let's get 5 draft picks and a couple players from the Clippers. They do that, and I think they're excited about what they got back for him. And then now they have an excuse to trade Russell Westbrook, the face of their franchise for over a decade, and they get Chris Paul. Yeah, I mean, maybe he stays, maybe he doesn't, but they get multiple first-round draft picks from the Rockets, so they rebuild in a great way.
And they're going to rebuild. They're going to trade him for even more stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's like, hey, I just bought Boardwalk and you have Park Place. Like, all right, we'll broker some kind of a deal. I'm going to win the game. You're going to have the 2 blue properties, but you're not going to be able to put houses and hotels on them. See you later.
Right.
Like, you know, so I don't know. It has been like one move after the next, which really makes it a lot of fun. And also makes you scratch your head and go, why did they give Steven Adams all that guaranteed money? Which Sam Presti looking like a genius in some ways and looking somewhat foolish in others. So, but yeah, we will talk more about NBA free agency next week. The rest of the show is baseball.
Yes, sir.
Home Run Derby. We're going to be joined by Corey Parker from the Bedford Eye Athletic Department, as well as Mike Ramshaw from the Fisher Cats. So, great show. Stick around. This is Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by Bedford High School's Director of Athletics and Dean of Wellness, the one and only Corey Parker. Corey, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, how we doing? Thanks for having me back.
We are good. It's summer. So, like, you actually get a chance to breathe a little bit, which, I mean, it's yes and no. Like, the kids are around all the time, so there's not the freedom of my kids are gone from roughly 7 until 3 or 4 every day. But for you, I have to imagine walking into that building every day and not having 1,200 kids around you and dealing with transportation and officials and sporting events and everything else must be way easier now than it is during the school year.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, obviously, coming in to an empty building has negativity in itself. I mean, being in education, I think we like to surround ourselves with kids and coaches. So it's certainly quieter. There's no question there. But it is exciting when, you know, I leave on an evening and then I come in the next day and I'm able to hit most of the things I wanted to get done because there's much less interruptions throughout the day. That is mentally healthy. because you feel like the day was a little more productive than some during the school year. But, you know, that's certainly the business we chose. And, there's different challenges in the summertime. It's more about, just trying to maximize meetings and getting with coaches or admin and fitting vacation times in for everybody at that time for admin. It's a little tricky in itself. So, different approach this summer. Certainly still busy, still exciting. It's a lot of good catch-up time on things that aren't necessarily time sensitive throughout the year that kind of get continually pushed on the notepad to do later. And so, with that said, it still can be a pretty productive time, but a lot of stuff happening, obviously still kids are here. I mean, every fall team's working out at least once a week, whether it's on the turf, basketball teams are in the gym a couple days a week, football camp, cross country's in the weight room running. So it's still pretty lively each morning, which is always good to see.
And so for you in summer, obviously during the school year, you're everywhere. I would swear most of the time that you're twins. What does the hardest working man in the Bedford School District wind up doing all summer long? I assume there's a lot of scheduling and administrative type stuff. The stuff, and you alluded to it earlier, that you just can't get to when you're dealing with the day to day.
Yeah, certainly. You tagged that term, not me, just for the record.
What did I do?
There is a lot of things.
Oh, the hardest working man? There you go, yes.
Yeah, I didn't say that. You did.
I did, yes, absolutely.
There's certainly, I mean, a lot of our stuff is all rotating throughout the year. So a lot of stuff right now is actually preparation for the 2020-2021 sports schedules, which we ultimately roll out in October. But there's a lot of planning for that comes into play for non-conference games, for out-of-state opponents, a lot of things like that come into play. Working with our, the relationships that we have with the YMCA, certainly St. A's for hockey, and juggling a lot of summertime in preparation for the upcoming season. We try to tackle that now because schedules, again, are more friendly for those directors that run those facilities. So we try to take advantage of that kind of thing. There is a different feel, no doubt. It's great wearing shorts to the office and, being able to work in that environment than shirt and tie. But at the same time, there's still a lot to get done. And the summer for, I think, athletic directors, it's a really good time for all ultimately professional development for myself as well, because it's very difficult to get to day-long clinics or 2-3-day conferences throughout the school year because you're bogged down with events every day. And so, late July, I was able to go to a 3-day conference that really was a lot of legal issues that are happening across the state, or excuse me, the country, that the National Federation brings in their lawyers, teams, and going over things from Title IX to transgender to equal rights. You know, it's a really good time for that because you're not inundated with, every other minute emails. And so you can actually focus and do a lot of that grit work then. So it's really healthy in that regard to be able to do that kind of stuff. And then selfishly, summer in itself, although we do a vacation in late July, it's vacation itself, being able to go home at 4 o'clock and make dinner and make up for 9 months where I don't make dinner or even make dinner, literally. So in that regard, it's exciting to be able to do that kind of stuff and have that family interaction piece as well.
And look at your kids and say, what was your name again?
A little bit, certainly. But, selfishly, again, that's kind of where it's awesome. Being able to help coach Little League in town and certainly seeing you around and being able to kind of do a lot of that family stuff is a really healthy time. And I think in this profession, truthfully, in mentoring some of the younger ADs that are getting into it each year, you really have to capitalize on that time. Yeah. Because, September through May goes pretty quickly throughout those days with a lot of stuff happening here. And so, it's funny about ADs, some people vision our jobs similar to teachers, and it's really not. Christmas break isn't a break. We're in 4 different tournaments. We host a lot of stuff. February, we're in regular season. Certainly Thanksgiving is a couple days off, but we're really kind of knee deep in fall awards, winter starting. So really you got to be smart and strategize the last week of June and really July to make sure you're doing the best you can to kind of keep that home front as healthy as possible.
It's a lot to deal with and a lot of communication coming to you that you have to parse out one way or another. And one thing that's come up, and we're with Corey Parker, the athletic director of Bedford High School recently, is the concept of snowplow parenting, parents sort of clearing the way for their kids whether it's with tests, quizzes, or athletically. For you, I'm sure you've seen it change a great deal. You've been in high school athletics for a long time. How much have you seen the parental roles change in the time that you've been involved in high school athletics?
You guys did your homework. That was this morning's union leader. Well
done. Dude, boom. Not messing around.
Last night it came out, to be fair, around 9 o'clock. But nonetheless, I think it's changed rapidly. I mean, it didn't seem that long ago. I think we were all in high school, and my parents, till this day, couldn't tell you the names of my high school coaches. And I played multiple sports at West High School, and because the role was just different. And it's not a case of loving more or more interested by any means. It's just the parent role has gotten very much more involved. I would say of our program, there's a lot of cases where my coach's cell phone numbers are readily available to the parents and the kids. Certainly, there's times when that can be overly appreciated and somewhat abused by a parent who means well, but is just very much involved. And so I think the term snowplow parenting is a drastic one, I think, in the eyes of a lot of parents. But the reality of it is certainly what's happening academically for some is carrying over to athletics as well. And I think the biggest change I've seen in athletics and what I try to work with parents on is keeping expectations at bay. And what I mean by that is there's some scenarios that, especially in this town, our kids are showing a lot of success at 8 through 13 years of age, which is fabulous. And I'm a product of that as well and had great experiences playing recreational sports here in town and then ultimately the state and regional level. And although that stuff is fabulous to do, where we need to be careful as adults is keeping those expectations realistic and in the moment, I guess, is the best way to word that. I remember a couple of years ago, there was an individual in town who I spoke with who was really discouraged that we only were able to win one baseball state championship in their son's 4 years being here. And I really wanted him to take a step back and say, but they were in the state finals all 4 years, and so some of the correlation was how great the team was when they were younger. And so you got to be careful about just kind of letting the moment happen. And so you're able to really celebrate and embrace accordingly. Kids change, situations change. Certainly a lot of, rec programs that we currently play that are, in one scenario that I've brought up. And again, this is no fault to Pinkerton by any means, but Pinkerton is comprised of 7 different recreational little league teams, if you will, in all sports. And so to say you beat one of them or all individually, each of them, pre-high school, they're now 1. And so, that's just one scenario where it's important to just kind of keep that at bay mentally so that, most importantly, as a student, they're able to just celebrate their experiences and you're able to enjoy it with them as a parent, because there's no doubt the parent role is a huge part of this. And I don't think any of my coaches would disagree that, the support in the car ride home or at the dinner table is just as valuable as the assistants and the head coach and the teammates on the sideline. Because if you're not in it together, I think it's more likely to fail for the experience for the kid, which is ultimately the only thing that matters. And sometimes, that needs a refresher and a reminder, and sometimes it has to be a meeting, and that's okay. Again, we're not here to tell parents how to parent. At the same time, we've got to make sure that people understand this isn't just their son or daughter's experience. This is a team experience in 99% of our cases. So keeping that at bay so that the kids enjoy their experience and we're not overshadowing it in any way as from the adult involvement is something that we constantly need to be aware of.
Right. It's always really critical to remember that they're kids. And the things I obviously coach in the freshman team this year, the things that I remembered from my freshman season playing high school baseball had nothing to do with wins and losses, although there was a little bit of it, but most of it was the overall experience. And sure, as I was going through the season, I'm sitting there thinking about, all right, is this stuff going to translate 20, 25 years from now? you know, yeah, you want to win, and there are memories involved in that, but there are also memories involved in a lot of little things that happen along the way. So it's
yeah, I mean, you're probably setting an example. I mean, you know, baseball in your case with a freshman level team, and I would honestly say freshman level coaching is probably the most difficult at the high school level, because you are juggling many times nothing to do with whatever sport you're actually coaching. You are coaching young men and young women, the maturity process of what it means to be in high school now, and to ultimately, hopefully, be utilizing the sport as a tool to engage them into, like, adulthood and making decisions and having consequences when they forget their stuff, and not relying on moms and dads dropping things off every single day, whether it be their bat bag or their uniform, and really trying to use that sport as that tool to let kids, you know, learn lifelong lessons. And I think Mr. Jizokas' point was kind of there, was, you know, we're not going to slam the door in kids' faces. We want them to have good experiences. But if we're constantly making the situation better before the kid can learn from it, it's harder for them to learn from it. And I think, you know, you could probably be on here for an hour talking about just this year and scenarios, again, that had no relation to baseball whatsoever. But that's the beauty of high school sport, is you're able to teach lessons to kids that, you know, sometimes you may not get in the classroom.
You know what, though? Hanson and I discussed it. I was really impressed with the overall maturity level, the hands-off nature of the parents, by and large. I mean, they let their kids do their stuff. And so while there are a lot of people who will say kids these days are blank and parents these days are blank, my experience, at least with freshman high school ball, didn't translate. Now, travel ball, you see an entirely different animal, but it gets a little bit interesting. And I know Hanson had one more question we wanted to hit you with before we let you go.
Yeah, you mentioned the fall sports, Corey, and as we start to look ahead to the fall, and football in particular, and you mentioned Pinkerton Academy. The last time we saw the Bedford football team was in that state championship victory over Pinkerton, and Coach Stank was leading the group, but he's moved on to California, and you've decided to hire Zach Matthews. So for the fans to get to know him a little bit better, what went into your decision to bring Coach Matthews into the fold?
Sure. Yeah, obviously, you know, Coach Stank, with family out in the California area, we're excited for him, wish him well. I still chat with him pretty frequently out at San Marcos, and how his development there. Again, he was a huge part of not just football, but really the culture of this building, the indoor track, the outdoor track program, just the overall day-to-day environment, I think, of this school. He played a huge role. And so we had big shoes to fill. There's no question. We needed an hope for a strong personality, a strong presence. And, you know, we're really excited to have Coach Matthews come on board. Ultimately, the position was posted. You know, being overseeing the wellness department and having a teaching position open at the same time, I think, made the position lucrative for a lot of individuals throughout the state, knowing that there's a possibility if their teaching background and they were a teacher, they could come in and do both. And so we took that into consideration when we posted the position. And ultimately what we did with a couple of our final candidates was they came in for interviews and had two committees to sit down with. They sat down for an hour with a football or high school coaching background committee that was primarily asking questions specific to coaching and, you know, the background specific to football in this case. And then after that, they actually met with our wellness staff and the other five teachers in our wellness department. And that interview was specific and straightforward to being a full-time teacher in this building, had nothing to do with coaching. And like I said, we had a couple of really strong candidates through the process, and really fortunate to have Coach Matthews. I think he was one that both committees were really excited about on both fronts, as a teacher and then obviously as a coach. And so we were excited to welcome him to the school, and he hit the ground running. He was still coaching this spring at Kearsarge, where he currently was employed as a lacrosse coach and football coach. Although he won't be coaching lacrosse here, he was doing that up there. And so coming down on the weekends and meeting with specialty positions and all the assistant coaches, doing film for 3-4 hours on every Saturday. And now, fortunately, he's secured a home that he just purchased here in town. And so through the summer, he's been here 3-4 days a week, interacting with, you know, 75-plus kids on the turf 3 days a week. And then next week, they've got their football camp from 8 to 11, which is the high school age. And then he's implemented a youth camp, which we've never done here, which I'm really kind of excited about, to see what kind of interest and engagement he can get. And so from 2 to 5 next week, the week of, I guess, the 14th, 15th, he's got younger kids out there as well. So really excited for him. Met his wife, met his kids. They're delighted to be in Bedford and have really jumped in the deep end as far as being part of our culture, not just a teacher or coach, but really being a member of this great community. And so we're excited to have him, no question.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to see the Bulldogs on the field. And I'm sure, though, you're going to do whatever you can in your power to enjoy the last few weeks of summer and a little bit of relaxation. We're going to let you go. We know you have a meeting to run into, but we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yeah, guys, thanks again. And yeah, certainly you'll see me at sporting events. I'll be at the game Saturday on the 12-year-olds. There's no question.
Awesome,
don't
dude.
Check out from sports.
Never. But,
and certainly for all the Little League teams or any sports still going on, best of luck to those teams for the remainder of the summer. Hopefully we can get a team to Bristol and maybe from there. So thanks for what you guys do, and I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, Corey. Take care.
All right. For those just joining us, that was Corey Parker, the athletic director at Bedford High School. Always good to have Corey on. And like, it's funny. You can hear the relaxation in his voice.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, he deserves it. He's earned it with really busy 9 months, like you described.
Oh, dude. I think about what my life used to be like when I worked in minor league baseball. And you'd start the season, if you were in a full season affiliated team, and we'll be joined by Mike Ramshaw from the Fisher Cats a little bit later, but if you were a full season affiliated team, you would start your actual games in April. But the months, February and March, were largely taken away, and the season really wouldn't end until September. So you're talking about this really protracted period of time where you're just you're a ghost to your family. As much as you might not want to be, it's really difficult to be around a lot. And you look at that and stretch things out by a few months, and you have a high school athletic director's role where he's at basketball games, football games, baseball games, lacrosse matches, track meets, every pictures. I showed up. We had our team pictures one day at 3:30. I had practice scheduled after that. I had a call. I had just gotten off. I go walking onto the field at 3:29 for the picture, and I literally get a text from Corey. Hey, you going to be here for pictures? Like, I'm on it, man. But
and he was on it.
He was on it. But the amount of texts that he gets and emails that he gets, like, dude, it requires a Zen level, a Zen-like level of serenity to get through all that stuff. I would probably last about a day and a half
right.
before I just teed off on somebody and that was the end of me. So
yeah, the Zen approach would be ideal.
Like, I'm counting, and I'm now at about 100,006, and I can't stop counting because every time I need to stop counting, something else gives me a reason to count again.
Right. You answer five and then you get 20 more.
Right. It's just like, whew, all right, serenity now. So yeah, anyway, thanks Corey for joining us. The thing we didn't ask him about was, well, there were two things. One was Major League Baseball Home Run Derby. We're going to touch on that with Ramshaw in a bit because Vlad Guerrero, of course. But you sat there and watched it.
I did.
I put it on a text string among a number of us, and I said, forget the games. We need to just play this.
That was entertaining. Yeah. That was worth the price of admission.
Oh, my God.
It was worth everything. That was really memorable, exciting, so many fascinating parts of it. And I've been thinking about it since you and I chatted and we knew that this would be a topic this week. What was there was one moment really that stood out to me as the most exciting moment of that derby. What was it for you?
The whole thing, period. In terms of intrigue, I really like Pete Alonso hitting bombs on his last two swings as the clock expired.
Yeah.
Like, and it's funny, the thing that made that event so captivating was the clock. Baseball's big selling point as far as a sport is there's no clock.
Right.
There's a clock there, and that was what made it entertaining. What were you thinking?
The one for me, I mean, certainly when Alonso finished it off, that was exciting. But the one stretch that was the most exciting to me was in the semifinals, Vlad against Jock Peterson, when Vlad was busy hitting 29 homers, but it was that stretch of about 15 to 22 where he just, it was almost like it was in fast forward. It was happening so
every
fast.
Every
swing, it was like seven or eight in a row where he hit it at least 450 feet to left field. And it was like,
it was
boom,
comical.
Boom, 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 boom. because they weren't, the pitchers weren't waiting anymore until the ball landed.
No.
Like in previous years.
You had been, that was kind of a hinky rule. That was weird.
Yeah. So they just all sort of abandoned that rule. And then to see it play out like that, that was something we've never seen in baseball, because the rule used to be you have to wait till the ball lands to pitch the next pitch. But instead, they were, it was like a fast tempo, you know, like a fast break in basketball. It was just pitch after pitch. And he just, it was like he would barely finish his swing on a 450-foot home run, and then he was starting his next one. And before
yes.
you knew it, in about 30 seconds, he'd hit 10 in a row, 450 feet to left.
It the amazing thing is, first of all, it takes a lot to recoil after you've uncoiled. I can't tell you how often I throw BP to Maggie, and I get the, "Dad, you're like, you're firing
too
him
fast
in too quick.
In
like,
between pitches.
I need to load."
Right.
There was like, okay, I'm here, I'm set. I'm here, I'm set. I'm here, I'm set. But the batting practice pitchers, it's funny. I would not have, and no disrespect to Pete Alonso's cousin who was throwing him BP, I would not have picked Pete Alonso to win it because I didn't like his cousin's BP.
Oh, it was awful.
He was throwing from a sidearm angle and it's sweeping. And, you know, what do I want if I'm hitting BP? I want a guy who's straight over the top on a downward plane.
Exactly.
And just throw it right into my bat path and give me as much possible time to just launch it. That's it.
Four-seam fastball straight over the top, perfect backspin. That's yep. what you want. You don't want these cutters.
Right. And Alonso, I think it really speaks to his raw power. He's hitting home runs all over the place. He's
right.
hitting the ball where it's pitched.
He had
and
to.
Hitting it out of the yard in spite of the BP.
He overcame. I don't know. He overcame his BP pitcher.
I saw that. I said to Maggie, I'm like, I don't, you know, because the things when you're 13 years old, like that they have now that we didn't. So she got on like MLB, whatever. They had a bracket, uh-huh. bracket challenge for it. And so she had picked
for the home run derby.
Yeah, so she had picked her brackets for the home run derby. And she's sitting there like clapping because she had Alonso and she had this. And I'm like, this is just funny because like I stand a better chance of winning a Nobel Prize than she would have winning $250 million or $250,000 in this thing. But like, this is still fun.
Worth a shot.
Yeah. And we're sitting there watching it. And I said, I think she had picked Alonso to win it. And I said, I don't like his chances. Like, that BP is not home run derby BP. And sure enough, the guy just polar bear crushing.
Yeah.
The polar crush.
I mean, he was awesome.
Isn't that a drink at like Circle K?
Probably.
Yes. Okay.
But, you know, one of the things that came up there was the old rule of waiting until the ball hit the ground before he could make the next pitch. That was kind of fun how everybody abandoned that rule in unison. Because it was still on the books. I mean, they still put that up on the graphic as a current rule.
Yeah.
But in this home run derby, nobody followed it. And so I think that really helped the contest. And when you talk about the speed and the clock, that's what I think was so exciting, is that they changed the pace of the event. And that's what baseball needs.
It was frenetic.
Yeah.
It was like you couldn't look away.
Right.
Because, like, what is the next swing going to hold? And what, like, sort of unlikely, first of all, what am I going to see for the next pitch? But, like, who's buddies with who? Like, and that's always fascinating to me. The guys that may have a history because they played on a Dominican Summer League team together, or, like, you don't know, they played in the minor leagues with each other, against each other. Like, the guys who are on different teams that you never think paths would have crossed, who have a genuine affection for each other. Like, and that's the cool thing about events like this. And I think, you know, this year's version of, we're going to talk about what's wrong with baseball as far as Rob Manfred goes, sort of player shaming or player blaming. Last year was Mike Trout. This year it was Mookie Betts, that he has to do a better job of promoting himself. And their idea of promoting themselves is, hey, we're going to throw a commercial up and it's Belly versus Yelly. Okay, great. That's cute. But like at the end of it, that's not going to do it. Like Major League Baseball's own self-promotion and putting cute TV commercials isn't going to do it. There have to be some kind of changes. Because you can't have the Red Sox and the Yankees playing for almost 5 hours in a game that's a 9-inning game, because nobody's going to watch it. And you,
well, unless you take it to London, and then you get a little bit of a bump in ratings.
Still, though, but like, and you can't start things at 8:30. Like, you just, you can't.
Well, that's one of the beauties of this competition is it's more like basketball, where you get to see the guy up close without his helmet on or his hat on. You get him up close and personal, so you get to know these guys more when you see this home run derby, the spotlight's on them. You're watching them for 4 minutes at a time hitting home runs, and you get a classic battle between Peterson and Vlad Jr. And that was, I mean, that was the most dynamic 15, 20 minutes of the night. It was just an incredible matchup in the semifinals. And one of the things that was fun, I wanted to ask you if you noticed, was, first of all, Vlad hits his 29, and then Peterson matches him somehow. But then there were multiple times in the overtime period where all Jock Peterson had to do was hit one more home run, and he was going to win it. And did you see how he paused for a minute and looked over at Vlad? And it was almost like, I'm about to beat you, I just need one more. And he lost his concentration because he started to, you know, kind of like show up the opponent and be like, here's my walk-off. But then he didn't hit the walk-off.
Yeah.
That happened twice, and then he ended up losing. I just thought it was really a fascinating moment to see him kind of go for that kill shot, and he wasn't able to deliver.
I didn't catch it. And I think part of it, too, is there really is a slam dunk contest aspect of it where it's like anything you can do, I can do better.
Right.
Where, like, it's Dominique looking at Jordan. Like, there is that aspect of it because you're not hitting in a vacuum. Jock Peterson, don't forget, Jock has had some big postseason home runs, and Jock has raw power, but I'm going to, off the top of my head, I think Jock is about a 240 lifetime hitter. Like, he's not, he's a Major League Baseball player. And the other thing that events like this do is they really make us lose sight of just how hard this is. Like, there are a couple things that as I was thinking this, I'm like, this is so great and everybody should watch this. But then you go and you watch some games and the games are just snooze fests. And right. I love baseball, but sometimes the games are just downright boring. And so if you're the commissioner of baseball, how do you fix it? Well, I do think it would actually be hilarious to have one at-large entry in the home run derby where you have just one human being off the streets and he's struggling to hit the ball into the outfield.
Right.
And the rest of the world goes, wait a second, that guy looks a lot like me, or he's kind of jacked, or he looks like he's in shape and he's hitting the ball about 200 feet and Vlad's hitting it about 450.
Every single swing. I mean, those guys swinging and hitting those home runs, they make it look like they're taking a layup.
It's
like, oh yeah, layup. I'm going to make 10 layups in a row easily.
It's
right?
Like when we talked about Cody Parkey missing the field goal and Goose Island did the field goal kicking contest in Chicago. Like, you lose sight of how hard a 43-yard field goal is.
Right, because everyone's at home thinking that's doable, even if it is under playoff pressure. And then they come and try it at that bar in Chicago, and nobody can hit it.
It's just, there's that stuff. The funny thing that I can think of that goes along with it is, we had a home run derby. It was the year after I left, and I may have discussed him. Brandon Smith, I know I've talked about him with you. He was our group sales guy in Kansas City. Played baseball at Kansas. I think he played at UC Riverside, Cerritos College. Like, he played all over the place, got drafted a couple times. We used to always push our field. We used to push Dirty Al. Hey, you got to sign Smith. Let's Smith the H. Brandon's like 6'5", 230. No, he can't. That would be embarrassing if Brandon, you know, he wouldn't let him do it. Brandon probably could have done all right. One year they threw Brandon in the Northern League Home Run Derby.
Uh-huh.
He almost won it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. The other thing, and I had... And we'll get back to some of the commissionary kind of ideas. We had a power outage in Kansas City, and I went back and looked it up. And oddly enough, my game story didn't even mention what we did during the power outage. It was June 20th, 2006. And the power outage was like an hour and a half before the game. Well, it's summer, and it's June. I mean, that's basically the longest day of the year right there. So the lights aren't out yet. But Rick Muntean, the general manager who was our guest last year, one of the all-time best baseball guys. Muntean's out there with a bullhorn because the PA system's down. It's a minor league stadium with 4,300 seats, and he's announcing to people what the situation is.
Okay.
And, hey, we're trying to fix this issue, and game will be up and running as soon as we can possibly do it. Meanwhile, Tommy Thrall and I are on cell phones with the radio station, and so we're on air, like, because we can be.
Okay.
And somehow Greg Jacobs, who was one of our outfielders, Jacob's little guy, like a Welkery guy, like 5'6", 5'7", jacked. Jacob's comes up with the idea that we need to have a home run derby. And so Tommy and I, because this is the stuff you do, we basically say to the radio station, hey, radio station, we'll call you back when we're ready to go. And Tommy and I go down on the field because we're doing the home run derby. We start shagging home run derby batting practice.
So this is an impromptu home run derby.
In front of a few thousand people, like I'm running around barefoot in the outfield catching fly balls. Like, and we're doing just home run derby, and people stayed because like somebody's announcing it on the bullhorn. Like, it was just only in minor league baseball does that stuff happen. But we used to always talk about giving people the second sense. I went to a T-Bones game, and how many people, okay, and then we treated it like it was a rainout, so everybody got to use their tickets for another game anyway. But how many people do you think went after that game and said, you're never going to believe what I just saw? Like, there's this home run derby. And like, would it take so much to for 2 minutes between innings, or even 5 minutes between innings, let two guys just take hacks?
Right, yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, that's your carrot. That's in the end of the sixth inning. Everybody's going to go take hacks for a while. Or the Bill Veeck thing of, instead of giving one guy, instead of giving everybody in the ballpark an Eskimo pie, why not give one guy all the Eskimo pies and see what he's going to do with them? It's, but like, you really, you have to realize, if you're the commissioner of baseball, people have short attention spans. You can't change that. We're all glued to these stupid phones. No matter how much we want to get rid of them, we're stuck. There are no pay phones anymore. So if you want to call home, it's not like you're pulling over to a gas station. You got to have a phone. So we all have no attention spans. So baseball, how do you cater to people with no attention spans?
Well, here's my one recommendation, as you suggested.
You're hired.
It
you're already
night.
Hired. Rob Manfred, you're fired. Hanson's coming.
All right, ready? Here it is.
Yes.
How about a 15-second pitch clock?
Okay.
That's fast. I mean, that it doesn't sound fast, but for baseball players, it's fast.
Yep.
Because they often take 30 seconds or more. And what's the minor league pitch clock? It's
20.
Right. So they've been getting used to 20, don't really love it, but how about you push it up even more so it's 15 seconds? What would that do? That would, I think, really generate some excitement. Because let's think about what we have right now. We have home runs. We have power pitchers and strikeouts, right? That's dominating baseball right now. So
right.
If that's the way that the game is going, why not at least make even those events more exciting? So how about if we've got Aroldis Chapman coming in to close out the All-Star game, he's throwing 100. Let's see his strikeout in less than a minute. If he's going to throw 100 miles an hour and he gets the ball back and he's got to do it again within 15 seconds, you could have a 100 strikeout in 30 to 45 seconds. That's kind of exciting.
Yes.
So let's put the pressure on the pitchers to make a decision more quickly so that we all have action and everything happens more quickly. And that will help the overall pace of the game.
Yep.
And, you know, you might even see situations where guys are feeling rushed and, you know, having to decide on the spot, and you can't just sit there and shake off your catcher four or five times. Like, you gotta make a decision and go. I mean, think about other sports. Think about the NBA. You have a 24-second shot clock. You can't just wait around for 30 to 45 seconds and strategize and contemplate. You got to make a move.
Yeah.
And so you're forcing the baseball players to make the next move more quickly so we have more action.
I think that's one thing I would love to see. What was it, 16 years ago when Billy Beane wrote Moneyball? I'm joking. That's what Joe Morgan said.
Right.
Michael Lewis wrote Moneyball.
Right.
For the tens of people or ones of people that might be listening. Walks are important because they get you a guy on base. But you think about, like, what brings a crowd to its feet? Triples, like balls into the gap where, like, there's a guy who is just flying. And is it going to be a double or is it going to be a triple? And it's there's a great line, Philip Roth in the Great American Novel, talking about a girl asks the main character what he really loves, and he says, I really love a triple. Triples are one thing. Stolen bases. Like, think about, like, the amount of daring. If you're Ricky Henderson and you're tiptoeing off, or Vince Coleman tiptoeing off the base, like, stolen bases now, we have access to so much data and so many statistics, and it's good because, like, it has changed a lot about the game, and it's changed how the game is played. But I think we can't get lost in that sort of stuff. We've gotten so consumed in that the sacrifice bunt is really a thing of the past. I mean, you still see it in high school ball because we're not playing for the home run, but the sack bunt, where so many things can happen and guys are moving and there's legitimate action. And is the guy going to stop at third? Is he going to round third? Is there going to be a throw behind him? Like real life strategy. Stolen bases, where stolen bases have largely been taken out of the game because it's more of a risk if you make that out, one of your 27 in the game, than is a benefit if you get a guy into scoring position. Like, but think about what was in the last 20 years the biggest play in Red Sox history?
The stolen base for Dave Roberts.
Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
But would that happen now? No. We'd be waiting. You'd be waiting for something else to happen. Like, and think about Roberts was safe by an eyelash, by nothing. And that is the difference between the Sox winning in 2004 and not winning in 2004. And what kind of butterfly effect does that have on everything else?
That was quite an exciting play that we all remember. And, you know, that is one of the beauties of baseball. I mean, you can tinker with the rules. You can even change some rules. But the thing you have to balance it against is the unique nature of baseball. And, you know, how do you keep that? Because, yes, it would be fun to see more stolen base attempts like in the old day. But no matter what, you still have memorable plays of every kind from the baseball playoffs over the years. And that's what makes baseball special, is that there are all those plays you described are things that have happened at the biggest moments. I mean, if you know, the cutoff play, boring play, you practice it a million times. But when Jeter went and got that cutoff.
Yeah. In the middle of the infield, the flip to home. Yeah.
We will all always remember that cutoff play. We'll always all remember the stolen base from Dave Roberts. And so that's fun. And so you can't change baseball so much that you don't have this variety of plays.
But then you also think, though, all right, last year's playoffs, think about the World Series. It just becomes a blur of walks, strikeouts, and home runs. That's it. Like, and they need to do something to fix it. And I know, you know, Verlander's all in a tizzy because the balls are juiced, and Rob Manfred says there's something going on with the baseballs. But, like, and I understand athletically, people are getting stronger. People are getting faster. The technology is getting better. Bats are getting better. But if you're the game of baseball, how do you go back a little bit and say, okay, what we've become worked in 1998 when we really needed it to, when we had McGuire and Sosa who were all on goodness knows what. We had those guys, but we needed that in 1998. Like you had missed 94. The end of that season was gone. And we needed something to bring the game back into the national spotlight. And that did it. Everywhere I went that summer, people wanted to talk about who was going to be the guy to break the record, McGuire or Sosa. But now we're at a point that it's almost like there's too much of it. And so, okay, baseball, like, what are you going to do to fix it? Because right now, it's struggling. And, like, I love the game too much. You love the game too much. To sit there and watch it just kind of go straight down the toilet. Like, I think there needs to be an increased emphasis. And Kyler Murray is one that I think about that, to me, is a downright shame that he wound up going to the NFL. Good for him. But, like, that would have been a guy with a lot of star power playing the game of baseball. And I, you know, I'd hope that he has the opportunity to do it, but I don't think that's going to happen. But you need to get more better athletes playing the game. The guys who are playing are great athletes. There's no question about that. But you need to find a way to get more guys like that. You need to make the free agency period, instead of this collusion thing where Kimbrel and Dallas Keuchel and everybody's not signed for one reason or another, you need to find a way to make it so the free agency period is like the NBA free agency period. That this is things that people are talking about.
Yeah, and the thing about basketball is the free agency period is all positive. It's all excitement. All these deals are happening within 6 hours instead of 4 months like baseball.
Well, I mean, it's all excitement unless you're like a Spurs fan or something.
Yeah, right.
In which case, it's just depression.
You guys have guys backing out of your deals to go right to New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, how about just taking a page out of basketball's book, not just with free agency, but with the clock? So I want to go back to the clock one more time. Think about college basketball. What did they do? They went from the 45-second shot clock to 30, and it speeds up the game. What did the NBA do? They went from, they just instituted the offensive rebound. Instead of giving another 24-second shot clock, you get 14 seconds. So you shorten the clock, and it creates more intensity, more excitement, more speed. And so I just think if you do that in baseball with a 15-second shot clock, you're not drastically changing any rules, but you're making it a more athletic, exciting event. I mean, think about when we were watching Trevor Anibal on the Hill this year, to bring it back to Bedford Sports, we kept talking about how he would make a pitch, Kyle Levine would get it back to him, and he was immediately on the rubber, ready to make his next pitch. And he was fun to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, there were seven inning games that were lasting like an hour.
An hour and 20 minutes.
Hour and 20 minutes.
It was great. I mean, but like that's, and people would come out of those games and be like, oh, it was such a great game.
Right.
Like,
and it was a pitcher's duel, which, you know.
It's amazing though, but when it's a pitcher's duel and every, like you and I talked about it, we were texting back and forth with the women's soccer World Cup finals. USA is dominating the offensive end, and periodically they lose the ball. They wouldn't capitalize on an opportunity, lose the ball, comes right back the other way. And like I texted you, I said, it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be USA wins by a couple, or the Netherlands on one of these breakaways is going to score a goal, and USA is going to find themselves playing catch-up, which is not a situation they want to be in. And they got lucky. They got a penalty kick and wound up winning the game. But like the amount, I had things to do. I had a lawn to mow. I had bushes to trim. I wasn't going outside because I wanted to watch the soccer.
Right.
Because it was nothing. It could have changed at any time. If I'm watching a baseball game and it's 5 or 6-0 because there's been a couple of walks and a home run twice, I'm going outside and I can watch that again later. Like, but the 2-1, 3-2, like bam, 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 like that's what attracts viewers. And when it can fit into a reasonable schedule, that attracts viewers.
Right. No, yeah, we don't want
13-12 doesn't.
We don't want to watch a 1-0 game that lasts 4.5 hours because there's 16 pitching changes. But if it's 1-0 game that's only 2 hours and 20 minutes at the major league level, because you've got Verlander against Sale and they're up on the mound immediately, they want to go all nine and they're just wearing out the hitters and they're going after them, then yeah, you want to see, all right, who's going to finally get an opportunity here and scratch across a run. And same thing with the soccer game. It's like, okay, U.S. is getting all these chances. You know, you got to figure they're going to put one of these away. And when's it going to happen? Who's
right.
going to do it? How are they going to score it? Even if it's only going to be 1 or 2-0, there's still a lot of drama there.
And it was only after Rose Lavelle scored the second one that I felt comfortable that I could go outside.
Right.
Like, so anyway, we're not going to take a break on this one. We're just going to call Mike Ramshaw.
Okay.
So here we go. Yeah. Figured it just makes sense. As our audience gets to hear the phone ringing, the telephone is ringing. Is that my mother on the phone?
Hi, this is Mike.
Hey, what's going on, dude? It's Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. You're not live on the air, but we're recording this. That would be scary.
Right.
No, we were talking about something else, and I was like, well, we got to call Ram. So, yeah, here you are. We're recording you. We're with Mike Ramshaw, the president of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Welcome to the program, dude.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
How's life?
Life is good. It's been a busy year. Just got back from Richmond for the Eastern League All-Star Game. So first full day back in the office. Carney and the Richmond Flying Squirrels did a tremendous job.
Carney, I haven't thought about that guy.
Hasn't changed a bit. You know, he's got his funky pants. And during the home run derby, they actually had all the Eastern League executives and sponsors on the actual infield dirt with netting in front. And then targets in the outfield. And you want to guess what was the center field target in a lift? Any guess? Parney.
Parney?
Parney was in a lift. And if you hit the lift, you got 50 points. If you hit the lift or he caught the ball while on the lift, you lost 25 points. And wouldn't you know, the third ball that was hit in the home run derby was caught by Parney. Parney. It was the only one that was caught.
This is...
So it was funny.
Todd Parnell, who has been a minor league baseball executive for, I don't know, I almost went to work for him in the 15 years ago, maybe. Yeah, he's been around a while.
Very long time, and he is a character. You got to love him.
He is. Did you, because obviously the Flying Squirrels used to be run by Bill Papierniak. Was Bill around there at all? Bill's moved on to private industry, but.
You know what? I did not see him.
He was
so
the one.
I don't
who,
want to say he was or wasn't, but I did not see him.
He was the one who got me into this whole mess. He was my first boss in minor league baseball. So
really,
yeah, it's minor league baseball. For those that don't know it, and Hanson's sitting here, he knows because he played. Is a bizarrely small world.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. Everybody, it's like 1 degree of separation from everybody, which makes it a lot of fun and also scary at the same time. So, all right. So for you guys, big day on Monday, Primary Bank's doing an event out there. Tim Schaller, formerly of the Bruins, who grew up in Merrimack, and Chris Carpenter will be out there raising some funds for the Boys and Girls Club. How can people get involved and go out and see you guys on Monday?
Yeah, first and foremost, you know, really big thanks to Primary Bank for working with us and helping us set this up. You know, Chris has been a tremendous supporter of the organization. You know, we've never had Tim out here, but I look forward to meeting him. If you want to purchase tickets, you can go online at nhfishercats.com, and you actually will purchase tickets through for the game on Monday, and then they'll ask for a promo code, and it's very important that you enter promo code PRIMARY. When you enter that promo code, $4 for every ticket that gets purchased, we'll go back to the Manchester Boys and Girls Club. You can also go on our social media, Facebook. I know for us and Primary Bank, we have links there. That might actually be the easiest way to do it. If you're on Facebook, you just click right through that link and enter the primary code or the promo code PRIMARY so that the Manchester Boys and Girls Club gets that $4.
I was going to say, too, Primary Bank also has pretty explicit instructions on their website. So that's at primarybanknh.com. But it's a lot of fun. I think you'll like Tim. We had him out at the bank, a year and change ago. He's just a really fun dude. And obviously his brother, Dave, used to work at the Fisher Cats as well.
Right.
So, yeah.
And if I can interrupt, there are other things that they can do. There's also, if you go on the social media page, you'll see that there's an auction on there for the on-field BP to raise money. And then we partnered with the Ted Williams Hitters Hall of Fame. They're actually donating some stuff for us for a silent auction with all those proceeds going to the Boys and Girls Club of Manchester. So everyone's stepping up to help out a great organization.
That's really cool.
And the weather's going to be great.
Yes.
I called it.
It's the weather's going to be perfect. So this year, I'm saying the past, not anything leading up to this. The single biggest enemy in minor league baseball is unpredictable weather. And for you, like I think about how the season went for me when I was coaching the freshman baseball team, and I think about our softball season in the old man softball league. The amount of games that have been changed or postponed. How's it been for you guys with the weird weather so far?
It was definitely an interesting April and May. I want to say there were 5 days in total in the month of April that it did not rain. but fortunately, with the great grounds crew staff and front office staff helping out here, I think we only missed one or two games in April. We're down 4 games for the year. What was really neat, not neat, what was weird is how cold it was. It was rainy and cold for so long. And then once Memorial Day hit, that was our stretch of good weather. But we've dodged some bullets. You know, there's been some rain, you know, that you'd think would hit us and all of a sudden disappears when it's coming from the west to the east. You know, it's just a matter of timing. You know, I don't care if it rains early in the morning. As long as once noon hits, that rain's gone, that's perfectly fine. You just don't want people, as they're getting ready to go out and come visit us here at the ballpark, that's when you don't want the rain. But I've learned in 3 years of running the team here is control what you control. I'm not going to get stressed out. I can't control the weather. Let's make the best of it. Do what we do best. If it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, we'll move on and we'll do it again the next day.
Again, that's very zen of you. That's actually a Mickey Rivers quote for the old Yankee and Angel center fielder. I'll send it to you. It's funny. So, I know the home run derby, of course. I know Hanson and I were sitting there texting back and forth about that.
Oh yeah, we've been talking about it on the show. The incredible display that Vlad Jr. put on was really memorable, and of course he made a lot of positive memories for the Fisher Cats fans last year playing in Manchester. What was it like having him on the team and then being able to watch him put on that display in the home run derby this week?
It was really, last year was a special year. I've said that many times. You know, really, I don't know that I'll ever see a team of that caliber again in my career. I mean, that's kind of like the finding the golden egg. Great guy. Vlad is really great. And John Schneider, who was throwing BP for him, also one of the nicest human beings I've ever met. You know, it was great. It was really cool watching that. We were actually at a concert for the All-Star game, listening to Big and Rich.
Huh.
And we had all these phones watching the home run derby, and it was funny. You knew when it started because all of a sudden my phone started lighting up from friends here at home going, oh my goodness, look what Vlad is doing.
Oh, dude.
It was so fun and entertaining, not only to watch, but then to see how excited they were, how excited John was, how excited Vlad was, how excited everybody was, just to be able to put on a performance. And who would have thought you hit, 91 home runs and you don't win it?
Yeah, right. How about that? Jeez.
he broke a record in every single round and still didn't win it. But yeah, you know what? That is what it is.
It's absolutely crazy, and the fact that Pete Alonso won it by way of a walk-off in each of his last three rounds, and what kind of luck did he have to be the last guy batting in every round? Like, it's crazy. And it's funny, you mentioned John Schneider. Schneider was catching in Charleston, West Virginia when I was broadcasting in Hagerstown back in 2003. It's everywhere, dude. So
I sent John a text that night going, wow, unbelievable show. And he goes, Mike, what an amazing experience for all. It was so much fun.
Yeah, ice your arm, dude. Ice your arm.
Yeah.
We're with Mike Ramshaw, the president of the Fisher Cats. And all right, we're going to make it short and easy on you. If you're the commissioner of Major League Baseball, what do you do to get more people interested in the game?
Very easy. What I would do is I would create more of the minor league experience at the major league level. There's a reason why other sports have seen declining attendance when minor league sports, particularly baseball, has either slowly had some slow growth or maintained. And that's because of the entertainment and experiences that we provide. I think if you're able to provide unique experiences for fans and give them reasons to keep coming back, I think that's how you get more people out to the ballpark. Less corporate, more family. That's what you got to do.
It's the real challenge, and we had when I was working for the Dodgers Single A team out in Southern California in 07 and 08, they used to send their front office out to games, and they'd come out and see the mascot, and they'd come out and see the between-inning promotions, and they incorporated, oddly enough, they incorporated some of the stuff that we did, but the difficulty sometimes can be, all right, you have a stadium of 6,500, they have a stadium of 60,000, and some of the things that really can work in that close-up environment are difficult to get to work in a bigger stadium. But what specifically, as far as the experience, would you incorporate?
Well, I mean, there's so many. I mean, it's difficult to pick one. I would try a little bit of everything that's worked for us and other markets and see what works in the major league level. I hear what you're saying. It's a lot easier to do, play catch on the field when there's 6,500 people. So you have maybe, 1,500, 2,000 kids on the field that are part of a group when you have 65,000 or 60,000 people.
Yeah.
But little things like that, I mean, the between inning promotions, the different unique, and you're seeing them do it more and more now. I'm sure you remember, Lauren, when we worked together, Major League was like, we don't need to do that. We were
right.
Kind of a joke. And you look now, every industry, these people they're creating that family entertainment, that fun environment to keep people engaged. It's now all of a sudden they're doing what we've been doing all along.
Right, or they're at least trying to. I still don't think they have a handle on it. And it goes back to, I had people with big-time ad agencies back in, 10, 15 years ago telling me that the best ideas that they would hear weren't coming from brainstorming corporate meetings. They were coming from minor league baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's how you can make it so that sort of environment, that welcoming environment, make it at ticket prices more affordable for people. That would certainly help
for sure.
Out. And the secondary ticket market has helped out with that to some degree. But
if I can add too, Lauren, one of the things that you don't see a lot or you don't see as much is that the community aspect, how involved on the minor league level you are with the community and doing events at the ballpark, you don't see as much of it. Not that they don't do it, but you don't see as much of it or you don't hear about as much of it when you go to a major league game. So if there's more of a way to tie that in, because we learned very quickly that once you embrace and make the ballpark the center of the community, then the community will embrace you. I think it's really important to do that and stay on top of it.
Well, absolutely, Mike. The one time our family got to come out this year was when the Bedford Little League had their night at the ballpark, and when the Bedford Little League players and parents were encouraged to come, and we came out, and the kids got to run the bases after the game, and they'll always have that memory. So that's one of those ways where you're connecting with this community, and it's a great tradition. So hope that can keep keep going, moving forward.
You have to, right? In order to be successful, you have to keep creating those memories. That's what we're in the business of doing, is creating memories.
And, you know, I said it back when I was working there, but, you know, I obviously believe it. They're lucky to have a guy like you to do it. There's no better ambassador for the team. There's no better ambassador for the game. And we certainly appreciate you coming on and joining us.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
All right, buddy. We will we'll talk to you soon, and hope to see you soon and give you a hug.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
That was Mike Ramshaw, the president of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. One of the best guys in the game of baseball, honestly. And just wanted to take a moment, thank our guests, Corey Parker with the Bedford High School Athletic Department, as well as Mike Ramshaw with the Fisher Cats. Have a great sports week. We could have easily filled 2 hours this week.
Well, we could have spent an hour on the NBA, Kawhi and Russell Westbrook.
We're going to go back to that. But yeah, well, we talked about the NBA in the intro. Don't you remember that?
Briefly.
Yeah, that's
we could have gone on for another hour.
That's the magic of radio. All right, so thank you to everybody here at the station, Bill, Colleen, and Harry. Thanks to you. Have a great sports week. Good luck to the Bedford 12s. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.